Murphy Law in Skip 8643, Sunset on Horizon Boulevard, Part 1. The hard-boiled private eye known only as Murphy Law continues to remain one of the most unique aspects of the SCP universe, capable of pulling in bystanders into his narrative lair, turning events into a stylized noir piece. His previous exploits have seen him battling an anomalous typewriter that can rewrite physical documents in its vicinity, and investigating a conspiracy within the Foundation itself. Law is a bit of a tricky thing for the Foundation, as they can't really contain him, but he's also somewhat on their side, even though he's a bit of an enigma. SCP-8643 features yet another escapade involving Murphy Law, and this may be his most intense adventure yet. Let's take a look. The story opens in Site 19, as researcher Leonard Heintz enters Research Station 44, immediately signing a form laid out on a table. He then goes over to a nearby bookshelf and removes a copy of C.S. Lewis's Till We Have Faces. He sits down at the table and opens the book, skimming along as he makes notes, before coming to a stop as his eyes slowly widen in astonishment. He then produces a cell phone and takes several pictures of a page before calling Director Mann and sending him the images. Later, at Site 278, security officers Gwenin and Lazard patrol the hallways of Floor 2. Lazard asks if Gwenin has heard about the new director coming in, apparently someone from ETRA, the Emergent Threat Tactical Response Authority. Gwenin thinks that she's American. Bilingual, at least, but they'll find out soon. Control contacts the two and tells them to head to Lab 36 ASAP on an emergency request. Upon arrival, they recoil as they see two partial bodies on the floor, their midsections completely blotted out. Senior containment specialist Levy disperses the crowd of researchers and technicians, and Gwenin asks if he's ever seen injuries like that. Levy hasn't, and doesn't think that anyone in the Foundation has. He takes several pictures and sends them to a specialist, saying that he used to intern for a lady who worked in pataphysics. He gets a phone call and has a brief conversation, telling the officers that the good news is that he says he knows a guy who might be able to help. The bad news is that everything that could go wrong probably will. Fade in. Exterior, street in an unknown town, afternoon. The sky is dark, rumbling ominously as the hiss of a rainstorm envelops the world. Few people walk these streets. One in particular glances about sharply, his hands stuffed inside a large overcoat as he skulks down the sidewalk. Every step he makes carries with it the weight of one balancing on the razor's edge between life and death, without rest or relief, trying to stay one step ahead of those who would have him buried. He has the countenance of a cornered animal, a man who is clinging at the end of his rope by tooth and nail. He is Murphy Law, detective at large. Even now, he is ready to give anyone a bit of the business. He is hard and handsome, with the sort of face that's seen enough storms to last a lifetime, while still coming off as a safe harbor, though there's little supply of those. He's in a bad way, framed for a crime he didn't commit, on the run from the most powerful organization in the world, with nothing to count on but his wits and a fully loaded magnum. He is also our narrator. He walks on in the rain, casually rounding a corner, glancing around before slipping into a doorway. Murphy shuffles down a dingy hallway before ducking into a dark corner of the hovel. He glances around cautiously, slowly removing a key from his overcoat, droplets of water coagulating on the hard wooden floor. He unlocks a door, heads inside, and barricades the door before finally breathing a sigh of relief. He is safe. For now. Murphy silently removes his trilby and overcoat, hanging them on a rusty rack, and puts his gun and shoulder strap holster on a table. He roughly drags a tattered cloth over his face. Once he's dried off, he looks into a mirror, scowling at the man glaring back at him. There's 4 days of stubble on his chin, and his eyes are bloodshot and saggy. He's in need of a shower, and sleep, and a hot meal, and...
What's the old saying? Only the bad sleep well? Whoever said that can go swimming with a cement snorkel. I haven't slept well in a dog's age, good or bad. I can't afford to sleep. Always gotta stay on edge, stay alert. Can't take a breather anymore. Not when the foundation's nipping at my heels like a hound from hell. Not when my back's to the wall and the odds are against me.
His voice is a harsh growl, as if he had been a broken-down junkyard dog in some previous life. It carries with it immense weariness, like a millstone, with only a man's indomitable will to counter it. Murphy turns away from the mirror and finds a chair to collapse into. He affords himself a single cigarette and holds the lighter before him, pondering the fire.
It's no way for any man to live. Always on the move, always looking over my shoulder, never able to catch more than a few winks of sleep. But it's the only choice I've got left. I've been trying to clear my name, get out of this pit, put my life together for years now. But it's Sisyphean work, and if I stop, I know I'll only be crushed.
Smoke issues from his nose as Murphy exhales. He flicks his lighter off, discarding it, staring out the only window his ramshackle abode has to offer.
Normally, I'm the guy you call when everything that can go wrong has. But what happens when all the wrong stuff happens to me? When every move you make is a game of chance, where you're betting your life and the dealer's got every card in the deck. I guess...
Close up on Murphy's face, his eyes glimmer as he issues a weary, smoky sigh. He puts the cigarette out and slowly closes them.
I'll just have to keep pushing my luck. They say an animal's most dangerous when he's cornered. We'll see.
Fade out. Snap cut. Interior, Murphy Law's safe house. Evening. A knock is heard at the door. Murphy, formerly asleep in his chair, is startled by the noise. The knocking continues, softly but persistently, as he regains his bearings, stretches, and takes a deep breath.
There's only one guy who knows where I am, and he wouldn't betray my position for anything. This piece of work hammering on my door is probably just another drifter who's lost and confused, thinks this is their hovel. It's happened before. Usually I just keep quiet until they go away.
The knocking continues. A voice calls out from the other side of the door.
Mr. Lawden? Are you in there, Mr. Lawden?
Focus in on Murphy's eyes, squinting and burning in anger.
Damn, they found me. I don't know how, but those rat foundation bastards found me. Only they call me by that name.
The knocking resumes.
No way in hell am I going to give my position away. Whoever this fink is, they'll give up sooner or later if they think I'm not actually here. There are a few other places I could be holed up in. Safe havens for me to slip into and out of, to throw people off my track. I'll keep my mouth shut and let this screwhead think I'm at one of them.
The knocking becomes silent. A voice calls out again.
Mr. Law, pardon me, Mr. Law, are you in there? I have urgent business I need to discuss with you. I'm authorized to pay you any form of compensation you wish.
Pan back from Murphy, showing his teeth bared as he gnashes them.
They're trying to bait me by playing nice, offering me promises they'll never keep. Thing is, though, they know I'm not so stupid as to fall for something like that. I kept my mouth shut, but I couldn't help but wonder what their angle was.
A silence hangs for a brief moment.
I'm also authorized to offer you complete amnesty for past activities. The Foundation is willing to overlook your shared, sordid history in exchange for your cooperation. I'll even say please if you like.
Damn. It's one thing for the Foundation to ask outside sources for help, but to wipe my slate clean after they think I killed two of their overseers. What in the hell would make them desperate or frightened enough to do that? I still can't trust them. The Foundation's the sort that would spit on you to put out a fire. Gotta play this safe. Gotta fall back on the one thing I know I can count on.
Murphy slowly reaches for his Magnum. After checking to make sure it's loaded, he points it at the door and waits. Silence clings.
Alright, either you're not there or you're not talking. That's fair, but maybe this will convince you to hear me out.
An envelope slides through the crack in the doorway, coming to a stop at Murphy's feet. Slowly, he leans over and picks it up, keeping his gun trained on the door. Murphy casually opens the envelope, finding three photographs inside. Two feature images of Foundation-issued uniforms, along with dress pants, socks, and shoes. The other image is that of an ordinary-looking man lying in a hospital bed. The man is missing part of his right foot. Zoom to Murphy's eyes widening.
I had no idea what kind of games this button-down bean counter was playing with the other two pictures, but I'd recognize the man in the other photo from anywhere. He was the one guy I knew I could count on, the only man I trusted. If this lousy, stinking, no-good, yellow-bellied errand boy did something to him just to get to me, give me one good reason why I shouldn't perforate you right here and now.
Ah, so you are in there. To answer your question, Mr. Law, we'd like to find out who did that to 423, and how, and why.
Murphy eases up, but keeps his gun steady.
All right, start talking.
Researcher Heinz from Site-19 found 423 like this during a routine observation. It's a condition we've never seen before. That, in itself, is concerning. You know, there are a great number of us who like 420, who like Fred, and they'd just take as much offense to this as you do. Besides, he could only be the first. A test run for some more undesirable, more destructive purpose.
A heavy silence falls. Murphy stares hotly at the door, his finger gently caressing the trigger of his gun. He looks at the photographs again. Fred appears to be in great pain.
What about the other two?
Site 278 personnel who suffered similar effects, on a much larger scale. Whatever happened to Fred's foot happened to their midsections. Their remains dissolved shortly after. On top of that, their records and identities were removed as well. We couldn't find anything on them, except that they had worked at the Foundation at some point. The discarded clothing gave that away. Oh, and Fred claims that his foot's always been incomplete as well, though a bit of research and some nestics on our part prove otherwise. Now, I don't know about you, Mr. Law, but having baseline humans and anomalies both suffer the same effects, physically and nestically, compounds our issues tremendously. I was called in to offer some insight, and well, to cut to the proverbial chase, all signs point to metafictional destabilization.
Metafictional what?
Pan back, showing Murphy squinting and clenching his teeth.
Fred was partially removed from all narrative cohesion, and it's my personal hypothesis that the two personnel were removed, completely removed, in a similar manner, hence why there's no trace of them except for their clothes. Baseline humans being treated as narrative constructs isn't something we normally encounter, and since you seem to have a penchant for getting yourself entangled in these matters, I figured you might be able to give us a unique angle on...
The door opens slightly. Murphy's Magnum protrudes from the opening, his eyes glinting from the shadows. He looks up and immediately recognizes the person on the other side as placeholder McDoctorate.
Oh, it's you.
Yes, we've not had the pleasure of meeting before, but our reputations preclude introductions.
Murphy gestures with his gun.
Do me a favor, Doc, and drop whatever metaphysical mumbo-jumbo you're about to yodel. Speak to me plainly, and I might hear you out.
Very well. The gun's not necessary, Mr. Law. I'm unarmed.
And I don't trust you.
May I come in? I'd like to sit down.
I only have one chair. Sorry, this ain't the Ritz.
Then I suppose I should be succinct. As I stated, we're willing to offer you compensation, amnesty, and resources in exchange for your cooperation. Find out who attacked our personnel and 423, Fred, and deliver them or their methods to us.
And you can't do all that on your own?
Like I said, you have a penchant, a modus operandi that many at the Foundation lack. Besides, at the risk of stoking your ire, this is exactly the sort of redemption arc you've been craving. Am I wrong?
This louse really knew how to set me off. I'd sooner buy a bridge off a man dressed up as Napoleon than whatever story this overpaid librarian was touting. Whatever the Foundation was really after, I knew they had no intention of playing clean, and I wasn't gonna be their patsy. On the other hand, sometimes the only way to get to the truth is to dig through the dirt, and the only way I could do that was to play along. Right about now, I couldn't give a damn about redemption or whatever snake oil you're trying to peddle. I'm only doing this because I owe it to a good man to set things straight. I'll look into whatever killed your colleagues, but if I smell a rat, I'm gonna exterminate it. Got it?
Murphy glares one more time before withdrawing his gun. Perfectly, Mr. Law. I'll have our accountants forward you something up front, as a gesture of good faith. Feel free to call on us if you need assistance. The numbers changed since the last time you used it, but the passcode is the same. Placeholder shows Murphy a business card. He reads the number and nods.
Just so long as they're not looking over my shoulder. I'm also gonna need clearance for Site 19 and 278.
I've already arranged it. Murphy stares distrustfully at Placeholder.
Damn. What the hell happened to give them this change of heart? There was no doubt that I was walking headfirst into a field full of red flags. I just had to pray that they didn't turn to blood. This has really got you spooked, eh, Doc?
We deal with the frightening and the unknown every day, Mr. Law. Though I will confess that this is a unique situation. Whether you trust us or not, we still need to know the truth and how best to prepare ourselves for what may come of it. We're just going about it in the most expedient way we know. Murphy hesitates. He finally takes a deep breath.
To hell with it. It'll be nice to get out of this gutter and walk around without having to constantly look over my shoulder. But I ain't shaking your hand or nothing. This is armistice, Doc. Nothing more.
That suits me. If you'll excuse me, I'll be burning the proverbial oil on my end, but do keep us in the loop. Oh, and one more thing. Take another look in that envelope when you have the chance. Until then, Murphy Law. Placeholder smiles thinly and walks back down the hallway, exiting. Murphy shuts his door, lets out a ragged breath, and heads over to the table where he placed the envelope. He fumbles around and finds a familiar key inside, finally cracking a smile as he studies it. Murphy Law in Skip 8643, Sunset on Horizon Boulevard. Fade out. Fade in. Interior, Site 278, Forensics Department, morning. Two sets of clothing are positioned on a large table. Murphy Law is carefully examining them. Senior Containment Specialist Levy is standing off to the side with his arms crossed.
It felt good to get out of that rat hole, shrug that weight off my shoulders, see the sun again. It was almost enough to make me feel human. The stiffs here gave me a bit of guff when I showed up, but it wasn't anything I wasn't expecting. Long is the road and hard that out of hell leads to light, Word here is that a man named Levy was the first to come across the bodies. He's the one who called the doc. So in a kind of funny sense, I've got him to blame for my unexpected visitor. I'll try not to go too hard on him. And that's all you know?
Levy nods his head, still keeping his arms crossed. Yeah, I found them in Lab 36, bisected at the midsection. There was no blood or entrails or anything, just two dead bodies I couldn't recognize or recall. Murphy nods.
Did the security cameras pick up anything?
No, there was a malfunction. Visuals cut out for 2 minutes.
Convenient.
We have guards on all entrances and exits. Nothing unusual was reported the entire day until...
Yeah, I get it. So it's possible this was an internal affair.
Possibly. We interrogated everyone who'd been on site, including the director. Even I got the treatment. Murphy grunts and carefully examines the clothes. One set contains a discarded lab coat, while the other has a maintenance jumpsuit.
McDoctorate claims nobody here remembered who these people were. Could one of them be the suspect?
Levy appears confused. You're suggesting one of our staff did whatever this was to the other person, then turned this weapon, I suppose, on themselves?
Be a good way to cover their tracks.
It's certainly a possibility, but that's worse than suicide.
Yeah, it sounded like a horrible way to go, but maybe this was something so big that it was worth that kind of sacrifice. I couldn't even start imagining what kind of messed up weapon this could be, but it was enough for the overseers to sweep all their umbrage with me under the rug. I hate to admit it, but maybe that book club wise guy had a good reason for being nervous.
And it still doesn't get us any closer to solving this.
He was right. I had gone over every fiber of these clothes with a fine-tooth comb, and the only thing I could pull out was lint and dead ends. I asked them to take me to Lab 36, which they had prudently left untouched, and went over to where they had first uncovered the bodies. Did you take any nestics?
Yes, but they didn't help. I'm sorry, we're as much in the dark as you are. Murphy frowns. He gets down on his hands and knees, carefully crawling along the floor, holding a magnifying lens in front of him. He pauses as he spots something and moves in for a closer look. 3 minuscule flakes lie nearly undetected.
Maybe not.
Murphy gently brushes the flakes into a small plastic bag, then stands up.
Think I could borrow one of those microscopes?
Snap cut. Fade in. Interior, Site 19 Clinic. Afternoon. Murphy quietly steps into the site clinic, removing his trilby. An ordinary-looking man is laying in a bed, his right foot bandaged. He is muttering incoherently.
2 sisters. 7 nameless gods. 4 soldiers. 7 barbs catching ram's fleece.
Murphy stands at the foot of the bed. He puts a toothpick in his mouth and prepares a notepad.
Hi, Fred. How you doing?
27 lights. 74 eunuchs. 47 veils.
Fred snaps out of his daze, finally noticing Murphy. He grins.
Murphy Law. I haven't seen you since that crazy limo ride back in, what, 22? I thought you were on the lam.
Murphy cracks a smile.
Yeah, I was. But never mind that, Fred. I heard you got into some trouble lately.
Trouble? I don't know what you're talking about, Murph. I've just been passing from one gig to the next, like always. Nothing really out of the ordinary has happened.
What was your last job, Fred?
I was Frithu, Royal Guard for Queen Ural of Gloam. Captain Barty is right-hand man.
Sounds like a real swell job, Fred. Is that where you picked up that injury?
What injury, Murph?
Part of your foot's missing. The heel, I think.
I've always had that. Just a funny little thing I've had since who knows when. I hardly even notice it anymore.
Is that so?
Murphy chews on his toothpick as he writes on the notepad.
Why do you ask?
Oh, no reason, Fred. Sorry if I embarrassed you. What was the last thing you remember about your job?
Nothing special. Captain Bardia took me with him on a campaign and...
Fred appears to struggle with his thoughts.
Did that clock always have 27 hours in it?
What clock?
Murphy glances around. There are no clocks in the room.
It's the funniest thing. 47 minutes past the 27th hour. 2 eyes, 7 gunmen, 4 limbs, 7 days.
You all right there, Fred?
Two. Weren't there more than 2 sisters? And 7 guards, 4 foxes, 7 chairs.
Murphy stands closer to Fred.
Hey, Fred, what's gotten into you?
Fred regains his senses and slowly rubs his face.
I don't know, Murph. It feels like there's a part of me that's missing. But that's silly, isn't it? I'm all here, and I feel fine.
You sure about that, Fred? I mean, you are in a hospital.
Sure, I'm fine,
Fred stares lifelessly into the distance.
Murphy, why am I in a hospital bed? The last thing I remember was Lenny Heinz finding me, but...
Fred trails off, muttering incoherently. Murphy attempts to rouse him, but to no avail.
Was I in Site 274? A passenger, aboard a 747. The 47th man in a line. The 74th coal I swallowed. Second chance. 7th night alone.
Murphy shakes his head and sighs.
Poor kid. He must have told the Foundation where I was after he got hurt. Figured I was his only chance at unraveling this Gordian knot. It was hard seeing him like that. And what's worse, I barely got anything for my troubles, except some inane babbling. Well, I wasn't going to do him any good standing around here. Gotta find a place to sit down, clear my head, think straight.
Murphy solemnly puts his trilby on and nods at Fred.
Don't worry, Freddy. I'll find whoever did this to you, grab him by the neck, and wring it like a soggy rag. I promise.
Fade out. Fade in. Exterior, outside Murphy Law's detective agency. Evening. Murphy is hovering at the front door, hands in his pockets and a cigarette between his lips. He appears to be reminiscing and apprehensive.
I haven't been back to the old joint since before I got sent up the river. If you were to ask me if I ever thought I would return, I'd just laugh in your face. But here I am, and I even got my old key back. I figure the Foundation must have turned everything I had upside down in an attempt to find me. But now that they were playing nice, maybe they'd gone and tidied up. Well, here goes nothing.
Murphy unlocks the door, opens it, and steps inside. He issues a short chuckle. The office is clean and organized, with all new furniture, supplies, and a note on his desk. Murphy picks up the note and reads it.
Took the liberty of cleaning up the place and covering your bills. You'll have to supply your own refreshments. Signed, PMD. Thanks, Doc.
Murphy throws the note into his wastebasket. He hangs his coat up, puts the bagged sample of debris on his desk, and sits in his chair, smiling as he steeples his fingers and relaxes. The smile fades as he produces his notebook.
What a case to have for a homecoming. 2 people dead and forgotten, another who nearly lost his mind, the Foundation bending over backwards, and all I had to show for it was debris. I left the eggheads at 278 a sample of what I'd found and kept the rest. Maybe I was wasting my time on it, but between Levy forgetting about dead personnel and Fred's mind shot to Kingdom Come, I didn't have anything else to...
Murphy pauses, sits up, and examines his notepad more closely.
Hang on a minute. Fred kept repeating the same 3 numbers. 2, 4, and 7. Did they have any kind of significance? An entire ocean full of red herrings came to mind, too much for 1 man to sort through. I hated to do it, but I called the doc to see if he had any thoughts. He said he'd look into it and would get back to me. Back to square one.
Murphy sighs and leans back. After a moment of silence, he reaches for the bag debris sample, carefully emptying it. Slowly, he extends his finger and touches the sample. A sharp hiss emits, causing him to jerk back in shock. When he looks, there is a small scar on his finger.
What in the name of...
A knock is heard at his door. Murphy quickly brushes the sample back into the bag and applies a bandage to his finger. He looks up, seeing a silhouette on the glass. The visitor knocks again.
Yeah, it's open.
A woman walks through the door. She has an olive complexion and stormy gray eyes. Her dark hair is tied up and she's wearing a red dress.
Are you Mr. Murphy Law?
I could have been knocked over with a feather. I ain't seen a dame like that walk through my door since my mother was a baby. She moved like an animal that had been born wild and free, only to be weighed down by decades of imprisonment. She carried herself like she had seen lifetimes of misery and torment, and it took everything she had to keep her head held high. Her voice was subdued, but defiant, and I didn't know whether to take her into my arms or throw myself out the window and run for it. Dames like that only come around once in a fella's lifetime, and that's if he's real lucky. Yeah. To whom do I owe the pleasure?
I'd rather not reveal who I am at the moment. Just call me Friday.
Murphy pauses. He looks her over again, slowly relaxing.
All right, Miss Friday. Take a seat. What can I do for you?
Friday sits down opposite Murphy. He offers her a cigarette, which she declines.
It's my husband, Mr. Law. He's dead, and I'd like for you to find out who killed him and why.
Ain't that a coincidence? I'm working my way through a job just like that. What can you tell me about your husband?
To be honest, Mr. Law, I don't know. I'm finding it very difficult to remember anything about him. Nobody else remembers him either, not even his family.
That is strange. So how come you haven't completely forgotten him, Miss Friday?
Friday hangs her head, apprehensively taking something out of her purse.
I think it's because of this wedding ring. I've held on to it ever since he died, and I think it's the only thing keeping him in my thoughts.
You don't say. May I ask what condition your husband was in when he,
His head was gone, Mr. Law, and his right arm, and part of his torso. The rest of him dissolved, I guess you could say, shortly after.
Murphy stares in silence for a beat.
I'm sorry to bring it up, but I had to ask. The other deaths I mentioned followed the same pattern. I don't suppose you got a good look at whoever did it.
No, Mr. Law, and I've no idea why anyone would want to kill my husband. He was... That is, I'd like to think that he was a good man who wouldn't have hurt anyone. I know that isn't really helpful.
Poor kid. I wanted to tell her that I'd look into it, poke around, grill a few suspects, but a woman like that, you don't lie to her. She'd looked like she'd eaten misery for breakfast and heartache for lunch, and no amount of honey from me would wash that out. It's all right, lady. Something tells me that if I keep following this thread I'm on, I'll run into the truth. But right now, it's a hell of a labyrinth, and whatever killed your husband's a monster running loose.
Friday chuckles softly, parting a stray lock of hair from her face.
I appreciate the metaphor, Mr. Law, more than you'll ever...
Murphy's telephone rings. He answers it. Levy is on the other end.
Yeah?
Hello, Mr. Law. It's Levy. The analysis for that debris you sent us came back. It's composed of a common volatile organic compound called isoprene. In layman's terms, it's rubber. One more thing. I got a call from Dr. McDoctorate.
He says that the numbers 2, 4, and 7 don't hold any relevant significance as far as he knows.
Well, so much for that.
Wait, he wanted me to ask you if that sequence was 2747. Murphy double-checks his notes.
What difference does it make?
There's a silence between them. Because it could be referring to SCP-2747. McDoctorate's given you clearance to examine that file. I hope this helps.
Yeah, I'll keep in touch.
Murphy hangs up. He circles a sequence of numbers in his notepad, frowning in thought. Friday leans in. Has something happened, Mr. Law?
Maybe. I'll have to look into it. You may as well go home, Miss Friday. I gotta head over to a special library for some, light reading.
As Murphy stands up, Friday steps between him and the door. I'd like to come with you, if you don't mind.
No offense, but you just get in the way, lady. Now go on home, and I'll call you once I get anything, all right?
Friday hesitates. She eventually steps aside. All right. Just be careful, Mr. Law. Murphy approaches his door and opens it. Friday exits. Murphy reaches for his trilby and puts it on.
Will do, kid. I'll see you around.
Fade out. Snap cut. Interior, Murphy Law's Packard 120. Night.
The nearest Foundation property to my joint was about 10 miles away. The rain had come back while I was busy admiring my new digs, making an already dark night even darker. Seems like it always rains around here. I kept my speed low, my lights bright and my focus sharp. I didn't want to take any chances now that I had found a lead to this case. I'd never heard of SCP-2747, but from the way Fred was behaving, I knew I'd be in for a rough ride.
Murphy's car is seen narrowly missing a red light as it swerves a corner.
What part did those rubber shavings have to play in all this? Were they just leftovers from someone's spring cleaning? Rationale told me that it was nothing, just some dirt left on the floor. A bit of negligence anyone could be guilty of. But my instincts said otherwise. And a guy like me, in this line of work, always chooses instinct over rationale, even if he knows it'll bite him in the end.
Murphy's car threads between lanes, trying to stay ahead of traffic.
And then there was Friday. I'd only known the dame a few minutes, yet she kept burrowing into my mind. Like a drug you can't stop yourself from taking. It didn't seem like a coincidence that her husband had suffered the same fate as those two Foundation stiffs. Not only their bodies, but their entire identities were gone, vaporized. She claimed that her wedding ring had kept her husband's memory alive. Did that mean nobody at 278 had any sentimental connection with those two people? They didn't have any friends, any loved ones, nothing? But maybe that's what happens when you screw around with amnestics long enough. Frankly, it's a miracle.
The windshield to Murphy's car abruptly buckles, a web of cracks splashing across the passenger side. Murphy swerves his car instinctively, gently impacting the car on the right. He frantically pumps the brakes as another glass crater forms, and another. The chassis shudders and dents as it's peppered, and one of his rear tires blows out. Murphy skids and careens on the wet road, desperately trying to slow down and find safe haven. His car sidelines a street lamp, finally coming to a halt. Smoke billows from the car's hood as gunfire pelts the driver's side. Murphy ducks down, narrowly avoiding a blast that shatters his window. He thrusts his Magnum out the jagged opening and returns fire. His door buckles as more shots impact it, one skidding off his shoulder. He winces and fires back.
Just what I needed. An ambush. No time to waste wondering who was trying to kill me. That list was long enough. Just gotta fight back, give better than I get, and look for a way out of this mess. Crashing my Packard certainly did me no favors. I wasn't hurt too bad, but the impact knocked the wind out of me. The rain kept getting in my eyes, blurring my aim, made my fingers slippery as I reloaded. Can't worry about that, though. Stay focused. Stay sharp. Try and take out as many of them as you can before...
Murphy stops firing as he notices the gunfire suddenly ceasing. Cries of surprise and pain pierce the inky sky. More of his unknown assailants are systematically removed. He snaps out of it as one of them breaks cover and runs to his position. Murphy fires twice, missing once, hitting the attacker in the torso. They keep charging while he frantically reloads. Suddenly, a figure approaches them from behind, lifts them off the ground, and slams them onto the pavement. The figure then approaches Murphy. It is a young woman, slight, petite, with bright, innocent eyes and short, disheveled, golden hair. Mr. Law, I presume? Murphy finishes reloading and immediately snaps his gun in the woman's direction.
You got 5 seconds to tell me who you are and what the hell's going on.
Oh, Sister Claire, I'm with Horizon. We're kind of in danger here, so if you could...
Claire glances up at the rooftops.
Wait, there's a sniper up there, and there's someone in that alley over there ready to ambush us.
Confused, Murphy glares up, shielding his eyes against the rain. He sees vague movement and fires blindly, rewarded a moment later by a man's scream. He then whirls around and points his gun where Claire indicated.
Drop it!
The other man fumbles, firing wildly. Murphy returns fire, hearing a groan and a thud. He sighs and stares at Claire.
How the hell did you know those two thugs were there?
It's just some minor intuition. We'd better get to safety before we're...
She's cut off as a large group of armed people encircle them.
Surrounded.
Drop your weapon, Mr. Law. Hands on your head. Knees on the ground. You too, sister.
Claire and Murphy remain frozen, weighing their odds. Suddenly, one of the armed men lowers their weapon. Two more lower theirs as well, followed by 4 more. Eventually, they all lower their weapons, becoming docile. An older woman approaches the group. She is tall, tranquil, and deliberate, with hair like the shroud of death, and eyes perpetually locked in a serene haze.
It's all right. Just relax. That's it. Good. Here, let me have those.
The woman takes their firearms and places them in a large duffel bag. She manages to effortlessly disarm the entire group, finally approaching Claire and Murphy.
Are you two all right?
Yes, thank you.
Hey, would you mind telling me how you did that, and what the hell is going on?
Certainly, Mr. Law, but we should find someplace more comfortable to talk. Claire, could you administer them?
Claire nods and produces a small canister from her belt. She sprays one of the men, causing him to slowly collapse. She busies herself with the others.
Just a sedative, so we're not followed. I'm Pacificator Biancospino. You've met my protege. We'll have to take my car.
Look, lady, it's not that I'm ungrateful for the rescue, but what makes you think I'm going anywhere with you?
Biancospino looks at Murphy innocently.
Oh, did you not want to know why the Chaos Insurgency was trying to kill you?
She approaches one of the unconscious men, removing his gloves. A red tattoo of the Chaos Insurgency's insignia is on his right hand. Murphy scowls.
Fine, but I'm riding shotgun.
Fade out. Fade in. Exterior. Horizon Initiative Manor. Night. A car containing Biancospino, Claire, and Murphy drives up a gravel road leading to a 3-story manor. A gate opens for them. Several gardens and a fountain are visible as the car approaches.
This place could have been on the cover of any well-to-do magazine on the shelf. The ladies told me this was the property of Grand Inquisitor Veridas. Not that my skin hadn't been crawling enough already. I had never heard of the guy, but I made sure to keep my gun close and my eyes peeled.
4 security guards are at the front entrance, but they remain motionless as Murphy and the women enter. The interior of the manor is resplendent with velvet carpets, crystal chandeliers, portraits on the wall, candelabras, a spiral staircase, and suits of armor decorating the hallway. Murphy grunts in disapproval as he is led away from the stairs down a hallway into Veridas's office. A fireplace is crackling in the corner, and various shelves are lined with books. Murphy also notices a small wine rack. A sinewy, elderly man with soft, sparse white hair sits behind a desk, writing. He stands as the group enters, offering a heartwarming smile.
Ah, good evening. Thank you for bringing him here, ladies.
I looked around, bemused, wondering when the trap would spring. What gives, Padre? Usually by this time I'd be handing my side piece over to a gorilla in a zoot suit after being frisked halfway to Sunday.
There's no need for that as long as Romia is here. She'll be waiting outside. But I must insist you remove your hat and coat. Manners. Romia will hold on to them for you. Sister Claire, you may return to your duties.
Claire bows slightly and exits. Murphy reluctantly removes his coat and trilby, handing them to Bianco Spino, who exits. Veridas gestures to a chair, which Murphy sits in. Veridas looks directly at him.
What would you like to drink, Mr. Law?
A mint julep.
Murphy appears surprised.
I didn't mean to say that. I wanted to tell him to cut to the chase, tell me what was going on. But there he is, making me a drink I haven't tasted since half a lifetime ago.
Veridas offers the drink, smiling softly. Murphy glares at it suspiciously.
Will you not drink it?
No. I think it's either laced with poison or sodium pentothal.
Murphy appears more surprised.
What the hell? Why did I say that out loud? It's not like me to spill the beans so carelessly like that.
Veridas laughs softly.
Mr. Law, if I wanted you dead, my associates wouldn't have saved you. And if I wanted to interrogate you, I would. I'd much rather establish friendly relations with you, though. We'd both benefit if you'd just relax and listen.
Murphy hesitates. He takes the glass, sniffs it, and sips carefully. The drink tastes perfect. He sips again. Veridas smiles.
Normally, I only drink wine, or a gin cocktail if I'm in a certain mood. But let's start with introductions. Maxim Veridas, Grand Inquisitor for the Horizon Initiative. I run a sort of hostel for those who, shall we say, have more to offer the world than most. You may have noticed my associates have some unique abilities. Sister Claire acts as a kind of human radar, able to sense people around her. This makes it nearly impossible to hide or sneak up on her. Pacificator Biancospino, Romia, is one of our most powerful assets. When her mother was pregnant, she was fed a certain species of pigeon that casts an aggression nullification zone of influence, and that effect transferred to her daughter. I myself elicit truths from those whom I interrogate, hence my rather florid rank.
Murphy sneers.
Sounds like something Herman Fuller would bark about.
Yes, it is a bit melodramatic, but effective. Besides, if Horizon hadn't taken us in, then the Foundation would have. And one of those institutions offers considerably more freedom than the other.
Sure, Padre, sure. Just as long as you get down on your knees and pledge your immortal soul.
Veridas remains smiling.
Your reputation for disdain and misanthropy is famous. But let us not dwell on that. You want to know why the insurgency is trying to kill you.
Probably because it's a Wednesday and they were next in line.
You nearly sound egotistical, Mr. Law. If I didn't know better, I'd say you enjoyed. But no, the insurgency caught wind of your, shall we say, arrangement with the Foundation. And they will go to any lengths to see it terminated.
Murphy leans forward, glaring suspiciously.
What do you know about that?
I'm an inquisitor. It's my job to know these things. Besides, this isn't the first time we've crossed swords with the insurgency. They usually fail, but they are persistent.
You don't say. Do you know anything about this weapon, or whatever they're after?
I know it is dangerous, Mr. Law, regardless of which hands hold it. I genuinely don't know what the insurgency wants with it.
Murphy tips his trilby, scratching his head.
And here I thought you'd be giving me some answers, Padre. All I've gotten so far are vague hints and half-hearted responses. I ain't gonna lie. I don't like taking one step forward only to jump back twice.
You at least know your enemy, Mr. Law.
Murphy stares coldly at Veridas.
I wonder.
Murphy leans back. He tries going for his gun, but stops short, folding his hands together instead. He sits in awe for an instant before clearing his throat.
So that's why he had that woman wait outside. If she spreads some peacemaking force field wherever she goes, that means I can't threaten this guy with anything. Damn.
Murphy blinks, rubbing his mouth in contemplation. Veridas sighs and broadly gestures.
It's all right if you still don't trust us. I can only say that we are not trying to harm anyone, Mr. Law. Whatever else you may think about Horizon, please believe that, at least.
Murphy grumbles, eyeing Veridas as he takes another drink.
Fine. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, Padre, but only if I got no reason to change my mind. There, isn't anything else in particular you'd want to share with me, is there?
No, Mr. Law. You're dismissed, and with my blessings. In the meantime, we will do what we can about the insurgency. Ah, and I think you'll be needing new transportation.
Murphy scoffs as he finishes his drink.
What? You're gonna give me another car?
Temporarily. We'll have your Packard repaired in the meantime. Think of it as an olive branch. Romeo will escort you to your vehicle. We're only loaning it to you, Mr. Law, so do be careful.
Murphy stands, giving Veridas a final stare.
No promises, Padre, but I'll mind the paint job. Thanks for the drink.
Murphy exits the room. Bianco Spino is waiting for him. She smiles faintly and returns his trilby and coat, then leads him outside, where three sedans are parked. They're not exactly Bentleys or Rolls-Royces, but beggars can't be choosers. Murphy frowns, stuffing his hands in his pockets.
It's fine. It's just so long as they run.
Murphy chooses one at random, and Bianco Spino gives him the keys. He gets in, keeping the door ajar.
So that's it? We're done?
I'm not going to kiss you goodbye, Mr. Law.
That's not what I meant. We're all square?
Until you need saving again.
So I got myself a couple guardian angels, huh? Swell.
Murphy shuts the door, smiling flatly as he waves and backs out. He returns to the road, keeping watch on Bianco Spino in his rearview mirror.
Now there's a dame that'll give a man the chills on a hot summer's day. All the more reason to give Horizon a wide berth. Now, back to finding out about SCP-2747. It had been a long day, and I was sore, tired, and in no mood for anything else to get in my way. Just find a research site, do a little digging, and go home and sleep. I had been wondering how the insurgency got wind of my activities, and something told me it was no coincidence that Horizon happened to stumble across our little fracas. The threads of this case kept getting longer and more tangled the more I tried unraveling them. And I had a feeling that...
Murphy laughs as he slows down for a stop sign. A small crowd of people quickly cross the street.
Well, maybe everything that could go wrong would. But that's just what I'm here for, isn't it?
Murphy continues to drive through the night. Fade out. So, Foundation personnel, anomalous and not, are being erased, and the Foundation is desperate enough that they came to Murphy Law to solve the case. Now he's wrapped up in a mystery with too many threads, with the Chaos Initiative on his tail and the Horizon Initiative looking over his shoulder. If there's one man that can bring this case to a close, it's Law, but at what cost? Find out in part 2 of Murphy Law in Skip 8643, Sunset on Horizon Boulevard.